Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the fifth episode of Diplomatically Speaking With. My name is Zai Mozani, and as always, I'll be the host of Diplomatically Speaking With, aka DSW. DSW is a series of interviews with the diplomatic corps in Malaysia. For each DSW, we'll be talking about the history, context, opportunities, and everything in between of the bilateral relations between foreign countries and Malaysia. DSW is brought to you by KSI Strategic Institute for Asia Pacific, better known as KSI. International global public policy think tank based in Malaysia. And I am KSI's Director of External Relations. And for your information, KSI is an independent think tank with a vision to build better nations in Asia Pacific. So we're very excited to have Japan as obviously part of the greater region that we are in. So today we are diplomatically speaking with the Ambassador of Japan to Malaysia, His Excellency Mr. Oka Hiroshi, on everything Japan-Malaysia relations. Your Excellency, how are you?
Well, fine. Thank you. Actually, I'm leaving Malaysia Saturday this week, so I'm happy to be on board the programs. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much, Your Excellency. This is a perfect time for us to have you before you leave for your next assignment. So, Excellency, let me kick off the session by asking you this question. Can you tell us more about your background and maybe your appointment as ambassador of Japan to Malaysia?
Well, I came to Malaysia November 2019, so I have spent the 2 years in Malaysia. Of course, my stay in Malaysia has been very much rich and rewarding. But within my career in the Foreign Service, I'm an Arabist in the Japanese Foreign Service. So I've been assigned to Saudi Arabia twice. I've been served in Turkey as an ambassador. So based on that career, being in Malaysia is, in a sense, extension, because there is a kind of the Islamic culture, the influence we can find here. But at the same time, this is a very interesting detour away from the traditional home ground of the Middle East. Up to here, we can find lots of the deep footprints of the cooperation between Japan and Malaysia. There are many more Japanese living and working in Malaysia than any other countries in the Middle East. So we are very much excited to be in Malaysia.
That's perfect. Excellency, you arrived in November 2019, as you mentioned. And obviously, you're leaving very, very soon. What have been your top three priorities for the past 2 years when you were, ambassador to Malaysia?
Well, of course, looking back the last 2 years, my term has almost coincided with the COVID-19. So my priority is to make sure that all the Japanese and the living and the working here in Malaysia are in a safe and secure environment. But at the same time, the priority is for the promotion of the bilateral relations between Japan and Malaysia in all the fields, the businesses and culture and educations and strategic and security, because we have such a long running the friendly relations that goes back to the independence of Malaysia, and particularly has been boosted by the Lucas policy that have continued for the last 40 years. So my mission is here to, based on that, or building on that, the good records of the long-running friendships, how to advance and promote and deepen and widen the cooperations between Japan and Malaysia.
It's interesting you mentioned about the Look East policy, because you know that next year we're celebrating the 40 years of LEP. But before we get to LEP and maybe the strategic policies between both countries, I was wondering if you maybe can give us sort of the historical context between Malaysia and Japan. And I know it's not an easy topic to talk to talk about, but maybe if you can give some context, because many of the ambassadors that we've interviewed have spoken about the people-to-people relations between both countries long before the formal relations. So if you can give a sense from your understanding of the historical diplomatic relations, or maybe not even diplomatic, just historical relations. And also the follow-up to that question is, how would you describe the current relations between Japan and Malaysia? So sort of those two questions combined, Ambassador.
Okay, thank you. I would say the bilateral relations, or the at the core of which is the people-to-people relations, have been excellent ever since the independence of the Malaysia, because Japan is one of the, well, actually the first Asian countries to acknowledge the independence of Malaysia. So ever since we have the many generations of the senior have worked hard and they conscientiously to promote the friendly relations between Japan and Malaysia. And we haven't noticed any single instance that will withhold, that will kind of prevent the friendly relations between Japan and Malaysia from developing. So in a sense, I'm very much lucky to be put my the feet on the ground where we can see such a fertile ground for growing and developing the bilateral relations in all the fields.
Got it. That's excellent as well. I mean, people-to-people relations are, I mean, as you mentioned, you said that they're excellent. Can you talk a little bit more about the relationship between the governments, G2G, between Malaysia and Japan? And I know we can touch now on the Rugi's policy, but maybe if you can maybe elaborate maybe in terms of some of the historical milestones that we can talk about between both countries from independence, as you mentioned, Japan recognized Malaysia at the independence. Were there other things that we should probably know before take note or anything worthy of this historical context besides Luke East policy? And if not, maybe we can talk a little bit more about the Luke East policy in the 1980s.
Well, of course, the Luke East policy was launched by the Malaysian government in 1982. But preceding that, the Luke East policies, there were waves, for instance, the Japanese, the companies, the foreign direct investment coming into Malaysia. For instance, that one of the largest Japanese business operating in Malaysia, Panasonic, came to Malaysia in 1972, just 5 years after the independence of Malaysia, and that is still continuing to operate in Malaysia, supporting the an export and the upgrading and value added to Malaysia. So the I would say that the footprints of the friendship between Japan and Malaysia is very much deep, either by the G2G basis or to human-to-human basis. Well, the both the Japan and Malaysia are democratic countries. So, you know, it's by the choice of the people, government may change, but regardless of the change of the government, we have noticed, well, during the short span of 2 years I have been here, I haven't noticed any change of the attitude, or tone on the part of the Malaysian government people as regards to the aspirations to strengthen the friendly relations between Japan and Malaysia in all the fields, the business and culture and the research and security.
And Ambassador, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned of the long-term relations, not just in people-to-people, but also the business links. And, you know, I didn't grow up in the 1980s where, Dr. Mahathir, famously pivoted to the East, specifically through the Luke East policy. But I remember growing up in the 90s, and this idea of Japan, Dr. Mahathir in his first term really captured the imagination of the public by referencing Japanese values, you know, the values of hard work, toil, humility, civic awareness. I remember that very vividly growing up. To Dr. Mahathir looking at Japan as the model for development, which subsequently also inspired South Korea and China to some extent. From the Japanese government perspective, Luke East policy now, you know, next year will be the 40 years. How has that, impacted the bilateral relations? I know it's impacted relations positively, but maybe can you talk more a little bit of the Japanese government perspective when this Luke East policy was introduced in the 1980s, and how has sort of the collaboration between both countries looked like through this Luke East policy?
Well, one of the very much tangible the legacies or the achievements of the Luke East policies are very much huge. The grouping of the alumni, those who have studied in Japan, so who have received training in Japan and come back to Malaysia, and they are at the forefront of the every aspect of the Malaysian society. Some of the government officials, the senior ones, have learned they have studied in Japan, and some are very much successful. Their business persons have studies in Japan, and some of the leading research in Malaysia has also had an experience of learning In Japan. So in that sense, we're very much happy to see a Japanese footprint is then contributing significantly for the developments of Malaysia. The alumni organization is very active. The presence of the alumni organization is very much unique. So they are the literary bridge between Japan and Malaysia. They are the human bridge working for the friendship between Japan and Malaysia. So we are very much grateful for the Lucas policy in terms of the creating such a the sustainable and unwavering the human bridge between Japan and Malaysia. And that bridge is based on the mutual trust that we have nurtured, not simply because the buying some commodities made in Japan. That's not the case. We have studied together side by side. We have worked together side by side in supply chains, either in Japan and either in Malaysia. So through working together, through learning together, we have developed a sense of deep, a strong sense of the mutual trust. I don't think the presence of the mutual trust will go away in any instance. So in that sense, I would describe the bilateral relations very much deep and the trust basis and strong.
No, I completely agree with you. I think you mentioned the alumni community, of those studying in Japan, extensive. I actually met many of them, and they always speak proudly of their time in Japan, and fluently speaking the language and also eating the food.
Yes.
I want to jump. I know we we want to talk. Usually the format of this interview is to talk about trade and economic relations, but maybe can we talk a little bit more about the educational and cultural cooperation between Japan and Malaysia? Are there anything that is worth for the viewers that are listening now, for us to know about the educational, cultural, and then maybe anything else between Japan and Malaysia before we talk about the more serious stuff like economy and security?
Okay. One of the challenges, we see every year several hundred the Lucas policy students, Malaysian students, promising students go to Japan. So my mission is to ensure that the visit by the Lucas policy students will continue despite the COVID-19 situations. I would say alhamdulillah, and thankfully, through the cooperations between Japanese and the Malaysian government, we are very much happy to see the very much smiling face on those who have landed recently on the land of Japan. They are eager to start the learning in the Japanese universities. This is the kind of the things that we are working for. Friendship, partly for the academic research purposes, but at the same time, you rightly pointed out the education is very much a broad concept. Of course, the acquiring a certain scientific knowledge is very important, but at the same time, the working together, living together, and the learning from each other, the way the ethics or work ethics, in Japan, for instance, classrooms are organized and the sweeping is done not by the other people, but the people themselves are those who sweep and they clean the classroom. That kind of the things can be shared with whoever interested in organizing their classroom. So we have just started. Of course, we have been working for the started with the vocational training TVET, how to enhance the programs of the TVET. And we have now established what we call the Malaysian Japan International Institute for Technology, that is to bring about Japanese style engineering educations. The university within the UTM has running for about 10 years, and now we are working for the establishing branch campus of Tsukuba University, which is a leading Japanese state university, has produced 3 Nobel winners. The branch campus issues, but at the same time, we are also working to promote or introduce Japanese kind of classroom activities, how we formulate, how we cultivate, how we develop the thinkings, the minds in a very much formative age, if this is of any reference in use to the Malaysian. So we are very much happy to be in Malaysia to address all the kinds of the educational cooperation.
That's fantastic. And also there are also many more initiatives like the Shape for Southeast Asia and Japanese Youth Program. There's also the Japan Foundation, which is also doing a lot of cultural diplomacy work in Kuala Lumpur. There's a Japan Foundation in Kuala Lumpur office. A follow-up to that question, you mentioned about sort of this idea that, you know, there are a lot of Malaysians in education, you know, sort of the knowledge transfer, technology transfer between Japan and Malaysia. A question that I'm curious when I heard about this idea of the knowledge transfer and technology transfer, and I've been to Japan you know, a few times, is the question of language. How easy or how difficult is the Japanese language to master, especially from the Malaysian viewpoint, Ambassador? If you can sort of comment, I'm curious to know, because sometimes because in Japan you speak Japanese, maybe in Tokyo you can get away with some English, but for the most part in Japan you're encouraged or you must speak Japanese. How difficult or how easy it is to master the language, the Japanese language, in this context?
Well, the based on my rather limited experience in Malaysia, I was very much impressed and rather surprised when I made a visit to the preparatory courses where the Malaysian students, they are now preparing themselves to be go to Japan. So they have to learn, first of all, the Japanese language, because most of the educations are taught in Japanese. So they have to master Japanese language, but at the same time, they have to prepare themselves for the subject. If they're going to the science field, they have to learn the physics and chemistry or other natural sciences, the level which are and bring them to the university education, but that learning should be done by Japanese language. So they have to, you know, learn the two things, cross the hurdle of the Japanese language, but at the same time, they have to learn, understand the, you know, subject. How daunting the challenge. But I was surprised that in the cruise rooms, you discover that the students are talking among themselves in Japanese, not by English. So this is the kind of the outcome of the eagerness, determination, and perseverance, which all needed for the the very much successful students. So I'm very much happy to see kind of the the results of the ongoing creation of the the Lucas policy, what is the creating for Malaysia and Japan. And I just want to say the Lucas policy is not simply the knowledge transfer. Mm-hmm. Well, if there is an element of knowledge transfer, this I would emphasize that this is a two-way transfer. Mm-hmm. We increasingly see, first of all, the number of the Japanese, the high schools or the university students are coming to Malaysia to learn, very much distinct, the unique, the environment where Malaysia is in, the multicultural social environment, as well as very much unique, the natural, the climate environment, because as you know, Japan is a very much monolithic and coherent society. So it's be easy for us to communicate among themselves, but now the globalization is going on. So to be active in the international community, you have to train themselves in a footing which is different from the very much the static Japanese society environment. There in Malaysia, you can find a society very much lively, and you have to communicate across the cultural or even religious boundaries to come up with a certain mutual understanding within the Malaysian society. So this is a very much unique and testing or training the field for the Japanese. So we are very much happy to see the increasing number of the Japanese are coming to Malaysia. One of the reasons why the branch campus of SCUBA is to be established in Malaysia is making use of this very much unique the educational environment that Malaysia offers. Of course, Malaysia is the unique in the sense of this is a kind of educational hub. So you can see not only the Malaysian people, but all the students from the Southeast Asia or Islamic countries, even the Middle East and Africa. So this is one of the reasons for the branch campus is to be established in Malaysia. But Malaysia is offering the very much unique the environment. So this is one of the reasons where we are very much happy to see increased the two ways, the educational cooperations between Japan and Malaysia.
And you're absolutely right. I think you mentioned about this idea of more and more Japanese individuals and organizations, you know, coming to Southeast Asia, including Malaysia, you know, getting the exposure. In fact, when I was one of the companies I used to work for in the past, we've had someone from Japan through a collaboration with Miti Maeda and Jetro, a Japanese. So I actually had a chance to work with a Japanese colleague for about a few months. My Japanese colleague was there to learn about the Malaysian culture, you know, the entrepreneurship ecosystem. So yeah, absolutely interesting. It's sort of, if you think about it, like the Japanese informal Southeast Asia, look Southeast Asia policy, you know, looking at the rest of Asia and maybe learning from the rest of us. Ambassador, let's jump into trade and economic relations between Malaysia and Japan. Can you give us a sense of the magnitude of the economic relations between both Malaysia and Japan?
Well, Japan is the fourth largest trading partner for Malaysia. Japan is the third largest source of the foreign direct investment for Malaysia. The main areas of the business used to be E&E, electronics and electricity. That remains a change, but we see increasing number of the new investments are coming into the new areas such as the digital and greens and the logistics and even retailers or the creational industries. Because the Malaysian society itself is changing, the people are becoming the richer. So there is we consider Malaysia partly as a kind of the producing basis for the very much the value-added products. For instance, catheter, which you put into your bodies to support your circulatory systems, that requires a very much sophisticated, you know, manual processing. Process that is found we found very much the qualified the people who can make this kind of very much sophisticated value added things in Malaysia. So this is a new type of the manufacturing which we are increasing see happening in Malaysia. But at the same time, because the Malaysia is at the center of Southeast Asia, so there are increasing number of Japanese businesses investing to set up the logistics center or training people for working the transportation and logistic industry. And of course, the riding on the movement for the green or digital, some startup companies are establishing their Southeast Asian headquarters in Malaysia because there is a good infrastructure, good quality talent in Malaysia. And they are kind of starting, for instance, providing the digital services, telemedicine, so that wherever you are, the people are receiving the equitable medical services in Malaysia. And also green, you have a very much rich hydrogen resources. Now we are setting up a certain the business frameworks where we produce hydrogen or ammonia in Malaysia and export to on surface transportation to points in Japan and put the power generations, the facility cleaner. So once the demonstration project is found to be efficient, effective, you know, the commercially feasible, I would think very much good potential for applying the hydrogen and ammonia to be used not only in Japan but all rest of the Southeast Asia where they need energy to support the very much expected vibrant economic growth.
So a wide range of different industries, obviously predominantly you mentioned about E&E, and then now you mentioned a slew of different industries that we are collaborating on, biotech, green tech, you mentioned about the energy industries. And what do you see as sort of, if you can mention the, you know, opportunities or challenges when it comes to, you know, the trade relations? Are we looking at a trend where there are increasing level of investment from Japan into Malaysia and vice versa? Or, you know, what do you see sort of the investment trend? I remember speaking to a lot of organizations and companies, countries, and they mentioned that COVID-19 has affected the investment levels.
Well, Jetro, that is the Japanese government trade promotions, the investment promotions office made the annual survey The latest one was the one conducted the December last year. So we have to get the latest one to be done in coming December. But the based on that figures, 40% of the operating business in Malaysia are thinking about expanding their operation in Malaysia, as opposed to 7 or 9% who are thinking about the downsizing their operation in Malaysia. So this shows that the in general, the Japanese business are very much content, very happy about the business environment in Malaysia. But of course, the market is changing when it comes to introduce the high value added the segment into Malaysia. They need the talent to, for instance, R&D. So these are the areas that perhaps we happy to work with the Malaysian government or institutions on the business sectors to come up with a local talent which can handle the digital in increasingly the intricate the areas. This is one thing, and secondly, infrastructure. The high speed internet connection is vital for the promotion of digital industries and technologies. Again, here we very happy news is that NTT, the Japanese leading telecommunication company, are bringing the submarine cable on shore of the Malaysia on 2022. That is expected to increasing the capacity and speed substantially the internet, the capabilities about 8 times the larger and faster. So this is the kind of contributions we are making. So I don't think that there are stumbling blocks for the Japanese business to come over to Malaysia, because the Malaysia is fundamentally a very much stable. But this is a democratic country, so we can expect, I don't expect that suddenly the streets are occupied by, military. We haven't seen ever since independence, Malaysia stands out in Southeast Asia. It's very much democratic, I've never witnessed a coup d'etat. So because the business, for the business, the long-term stability matters. Of course, we see, ever since I came here, the change of government, but this is a kind of the cup of stone, I would say. And so long-term, the political stability, this civilian control is very much embedded into the genes of the DNA of the Malaysian. So this is something we can count on. And the quality infrastructure, the road, and the sewage system is very good in Malaysia, I was told. The 80% of the household in the cities are connected to sewage system. This is almost on par, the same level as you find in the in Japan, and much, much higher than the neighboring countries. Again, I would say this is kind of the one of the contributions that JICA, Japanese, the development assistance has contributed in this area. So the infrastructure wise, the stability wise, and English very well spoken, as you said. So this is a kind of advantage the Malaysia continued to offer to Malaysia, and the geographical locations, at the center of the Southeast Asia, very much attractive for the logistic industries. So to attract more of a R&D, value-added type segment of the industries, perhaps we need to address the talent that.
It's interesting. One of the things that I really found interesting what you mentioned was the idea of political stability, which has always been Malaysia's strongest suit, because political stability also gives certainty of policy, sustainability, and predictability, which is something that investors and business look for. I don't know whether Malaysia is, whether the political stability is still our strongest suit, given that we've changed government quite a number of times in the past few years. But I think the idea of the business relations is very strong in Malaysia. When you think about the business to business relations, I think of MAJECA, the Malaysia Japan Economic Association, which has a long and deep history in fostering business relations between the two countries in trade, investment, social and economic cooperation and tourism and you know other things. And I think it bodes well for both countries as we you know move on the next 10 years in our business relations. Basically, I'm just looking at the time. You know, I can't believe it's already been half an hour since you know we started this interview. I want to jump into this idea of strategic and security issues between both countries, and I think this is a topic that maybe doesn't get talked enough in public discourse. You know, but perhaps you can elaborate a little, the forms of security cooperations between Malaysia and Japan, because I know Japan has a free and open Indo-Pacific policy, which looks into upholding a rules-based international regional order, including Malaysia. And this is something that Malaysia welcomes because you know, Malaysia has always been a proponent of a free and open region ever since the inception of ASEAN and you know the zone of peace in the 1970s. So maybe you can talk a little bit more about security relations and cooperation between Malaysia and Japan.
Well, thank you. I try to visit as many places as possible during the tenure, and I visited Malacca, I visited Port Dickson, I visited the Pennon Hill, climbed Pennon Hill. Then if you look at the sea, direction to the sea from the top of the Pennon Hill, from Port Dickson, or from the top of the hill of the Malacca, then instantly know that the lines of ships are navigating through the Strait of Malacca. Now, so instantly you understand how important Malaysia is for the international shipping. International shipping not only connects the countries in the regions, but the countries far away, like Japan and Korea and China, or the India or the Middle East. So it is very vital for the international the trading and the investments to continue to flourish. That the free and say the passage, or free and open, we call it, connects the two oceans. The Pacific Ocean, Indian Oceans are vital for the, first of all, the stability, and also for the prosperity of the region, as well as the international community. So it's a very much the rather perhaps acceptable to anyone. We need the free and open the system to be put in place for the stability and security and prosperity in the region. And what we are doing is that we are putting in place several elements. For instance, we are working for the connectivity enhancement. We have been working on the construction roads through ODA in the past. Now we are working through the connecting the water, the supply within Malaysia, for instance, connecting the water-rich the Pahang state with water shortage, the Selangor state, by digging underground tunnel, which is the longest in Southeast Asia, is my Japan's contributions, or training MMEA, Malaysian Coast Guards. So they are the persons who are address the daily challenges, the smugglings, or the hijacking, or to make sure the navigations will be conducted in a safe and secure manner. So we are now working for the training of the MMA people by providing training, as well as providing the 90 meter size of the coast guard the vessels. So yeah, so this is the basic concept. We have to bring about the free and open in the Pacific. This is the law basis, not the, you know, by the force or intimidation. The use of force should not be the dictating power, but it's up to the law that the govern these the navigation system or the system overflying the system. So this is for the benefit of all the countries in the region.
It's interesting. I think the and. This is, I think, the quiet diplomacy of Japan, because I think in many ways you know, when we think of infrastructure projects, we think of China's Belt Road Initiative, but Japan has done a lot. When you mentioned about the construction of the tunnel project that transfers water from Pahang to Selangor, Ambassador, to be frank, I had no idea there was a project, and I think that's a testament to the amount of work that the Japanese government, you know, is investing in the countries in the Indo-Pacific, Asia-Pacific region. Excellent, I think the what you mentioned, I think you know, is excellent in terms of you know, building closer relations. Ambassador, can you speak a little bit more? I think on any specific security cooperation in a military or defense cooperation, if there's any worth mentioning between both countries.
Well, before the free and open in the Pacific is a very much simple idea, that it is the law, it is a rule that they govern the areas. So I'm very happy to see this concept, the free and open, increasingly accepted by larger number of countries, like European countries or the, you know, Asian countries are coming for the supporting the concept. And so I hope that the concept is now being accepted by the larger number of countries. The security, the cooperation, well, we don't send our troops overseas. Our security or the self-defense forces participate in the UN-led, the you know, peace-building or, you know, operations, for instance, the South Sudan, the construction of the road, construction of the water pipes, and the, you know, this kind of things we participate at. We don't send any, you know, self-defense forces personnel overseas. On that basis, what we are doing security purposes, that the for instance, the share, the because the assets of the belonging to the forces can be used once emergency situation takes place, for instance, the hurricanes and the earthquake or disaster happens, the assets of the belonging to the forces can be used for the helping the people affected. So we're happy to share the experience of, in Japan, of the how to the mitigate effects by the, you know, so it's a kind of humanitarian disaster mitigating the expertise and experience sharing. The exercise now starting between Japanese self-defense forces and the Malaysian forces. So this is a relatively new areas, but the, at the same time, kind of the promising areas of the collaborations between the two security operators. And we are very pursuing the, we can contribute to whatever way that our defense, the development of the, I mean, the equipments and the facilities, if Japanese technologies are regarded or being used to the Malaysians, then we, of course, we are very much happy to promote that kind of the defense of the equipments, the collaborations between Japan and Malaysia. And of course, we are happy to see educational exchange between two security forces. We're happy to see how many, the four or six the officers from the Malaysians, the military forces now in attached to the Japanese Self-Defense Forces Academic Institute. So that kind of the exchange of the personnel is very much the important to deepen the mutual understanding between the two security operators. Less than the full-fledged security forces, now I mentioned the Malaysians, the Coast Guard, they play a vital role as a civilian organization for the peace and security in the maritime areas. This is the kind of the very much traditional area where we provide the support in terms of providing the assets or in terms of providing the training, etc.
And you provided a very interesting context also, you know, when you mentioned about the idea of Japanese pacifist, you know, in his military approach. And I think that's you know, important context for us to understand the security cooperation. And I think you mentioned about the peacekeeping operations and how, you know, the technical cooperation between the two countries. I also want to take note, I think you mentioned early on before you answered about security specifically about Indo-Pacific. And I think it's worth mentioning again that I remember studying this in university. Prime Minister Shinzo Abe was the one who introduced the idea of the Indo-Pacific concept, which was then accepted by Australia, United States, and allies, Western allies, and also the fact that Japan also part of the quadrilateral security dialogue, aka the Quad. And it goes to show that Japan has been, a pacifying and stabilizing force in the region to make sure that the Indo-Pacific is free and open. Ambassador, we have done this interview for over 40 minutes. We only have about 5 minutes left on the clock. I want to ask you one final question. And I think this is a question, it's a call to action for people, our audience. If you think you're speaking to people, youth leaders, business leaders, policymakers that want to, build closer relations with Japan, whether it's through business, through, youth engagement, through policy, what would be your call to action to them? You can even mention, where can they find, you or your predecessor, your successor, how to find the embassy, if there is a way for them to connect specifically. But, feel free to mention anything of that nature to our audience.
Well, next year, they marks the 40th anniversary since the launch of the rupees policy, which was launched in 1982. So 2022 marks the 40th anniversary. And also 2022 will be the 65th anniversary since the independence of Malaysia. So this is going to be a very much optimal moment for us to highlight the achievement that Japan and Malaysia have, they work together. At the same time, a good occasion for us to envision and consider how Japan and Malaysia can work together for the future of the both countries, but not only for the both countries only, by the sharing of their experiences and the forces, perhaps we can work together for the region or even for the global community. So in a sense, we make use of very much the strategic partnership, which is based on a trust, to make it and transform or make it as a more proactive way to make it, we can call ourselves a co-creator of peace and prosperity, not something we are kind of enjoy something somebody else has provided for us, but why not? Because such a strong, the trustful relations exist between Japan and Malaysia, then why not to utilize the good basis for the region, for the globe? So in that sense, we're happy to see Japan and Malaysia further strengthen their friendship as co-creator of peace and prosperity for the globe.
And with that, Ambassador, I think we should end on that note of peace and prosperity as we look to the 40th anniversary of Lupis policy between Malaysia and Japan. And for the audience listening today or whenever you're listening to this interview, please follow the Embassy of Japan in Malaysia at Facebook at Japan in Malaysia and visit the website at www.my.emb-japan.go.jp. With that, Ambassador, thank you for your time, and we look forward to working closely with the embassy in many weeks, months, and years to come.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.